Welcome back to Pax Europiana, this time back from Vienna. After 3 weeks of traveling, I'm now back in Vienna and really have my big microphone here. I really like it. And I hope the sound quality will be better again. And also, I hope that you enjoy my reports from Germany. We have a new chancellor soon. Armin Laschet was selected as the candidate of the main center-right-wing parties. Also, the Green have a new candidate. With all probability, we will not have a green chancellor, but it will be Armin Laschet who will carry on the tradition of very responsible pro-American, pro-European and pro-enlargement policy of the CDU. He is very much in the tradition of Helmut Kohl, so we can have a reliable partner in Germany, most likely in a coalition with the Green Party, maybe as well with the Liberals. So this is all very good news from Germany. We have very good news from America as well, with the progress for the American Jobs and Growth Act. That's an important infrastructure legislation coming. And, we are somehow recovering from this terrible winter and from this crisis of Corona. It's still ongoing, definitely, but there is obviously progress now in vaccination. And we are now, the policymakers in Europe are discussing how to organize the recovery and how to repay the massive debt levels and what really to do to ensure economic growth in Europe in the 2020s after this terrible shock of the Corona crisis. And one aspect, I have made already many aspects covered of economics, but I want to focus now on what I call the European Growth and Unity Act, which we need. And that's basically similar like Biden has done it now. First, to have this big financial package. We have done that in 2021 with the European Recovery Act and program. And that was very good. I'm talking about the 750 billion agenda and this first time mutualization of debt. What we need in Europe is now to follow the Biden presidency lead and do a big infrastructure program, mainly for Eastern Europe. I call it the European Growth and Unity Program or Act, or however you want to call legislation. But we need a big similar package like the 750 billion for, which we had mainly for Southern Europe. Ultimately, they were mainly to save Italy and Spain, but also others got something. But mainly they were focused on these two worst hit crisis countries by the Corona crisis. And this is the model now. We need the same again. And we need now to focus on long lasting infrastructure also for Southern Europe, but also very much focused on what we should have done already 30 years ago is to do something like we have done for the German unity, this kind of reconstruction and infrastructure drive for the German unity. The program for German Einheit, Wiederaufbau Ost, it was called. And we need the same now for Eastern Europe in terms of highway infrastructure and high-speed railway infrastructure. That's my main focus in this podcast now. That's expensive, obviously, but we cannot go on that we just have French, Italian, Nordic and Western European, Southern European high-speed rails, and we have no Eastern European high-speed rails. Obviously, we need also to invest in energy, in infrastructure. That's very important. We need to invest in digital infrastructure. We need to invest in highway infrastructure. I talked already extensively about all these topics. But now my focus is to have high-speed railway for Eastern Europe, funded by the European Union itself, by a new package of 750 billion. Same way we've done it now in July 2020. It was historic, people said, yes. And if it was historic, we are actually in a good effort to do that historic repeated again. And what we need to do? I've focused already on one, let's first on the principles, The principles, again, this must be not paid by the member states, not by the new 13 member states, not by the but by the EU itself, funded by all of us together. Because the fiscal space in the new countries, they are still too poor, and for decades to come, they will also stay poor if we don't invest in interconnectivity. But we cannot burden the fiscal space with this kind of cost. It's impossible otherwise. Yeah. And also, we need to design high-speed railway according to European priorities of geography, basically, and not of political geography, where it means where the borders are with the Balkans or with Ukraine. We need to draft this recovery plan in a pan-European context where really high-speed railway makes sense, where are the people to be transported, where do we want to invest in which regions and which connectivity matters. And I will discuss all of these projects now, where high-speed rail should be built. But first of all, let's be clear, paid by the general European taxpayers. So basically, it's a transfer in, it's an infrastructure union funded together, funded by the European taxpayers via such a second package, done by the European Investment Bank. Possible also, as I have already called many times, to set up a European Agency for Railway Infrastructure and then to fund this from the European budget, basically, via this new debt issued mutually. That's very important. And the focus should be not only Eastern Europe, but mainly. I'm also calling, as you know already, for the Messina tunnel to connect Italy with Tunisia, and also for the Gibraltar tunnel, the high-speed railway, to connect also Spain with Morocco. But now I would like to focus very much that most of the money goes into the new member states and also towards Ukraine and the Balkans and Turkey. So the idea is basically to have one big string of investment going similar like we have the Brenner Basis Tunnel crossing the Alps. We need one diagonal from Nuremberg towards Zagreb crossing the Austrian Alps. Then we need one string north from Linz to Prague to Berlin. And then we need also one from Vienna to Prague, one from Vienna northwards towards Gdansk, and then Berlin east towards Poland. Then a special role plays, of course, Budapest, the center of the European high-speed railway network, going north towards Helsinki and connecting Budapest with Helsinki and the tunnel, obviously, to Helsinki from Estonia. And that's very important. And then east-west, obviously, from Dresden to Krakow to Lutsk to Kiev to Mariupol. From Mariupol, again, one to Kherson and Odessa. One from Kherson, that's basically the northern twin of Crimea, towards Kiev. One from Kiev south to Vinnytsia and Chernivtsi towards Bucharest again. And obviously one from Budapest to Bucharest, closing in towards the Bulgarian coast, and one from Niš in Serbia to Istanbul, from Istanbul then connecting with the already existing high-speed infrastructure around Ankara, then connecting towards the Caucasus and towards Tbilisi and Baku, towards high-speed, basically going towards Baku in Azerbaijan. Then also in the Balkans, one from in Athens, they are doing already something. And then to connect Thessaloniki with Patras and with Thessaloniki and Athens with Patras, Patras with Athens, Athens then north to Thessaloniki, then to Skopje, Serbia, Belgrade again. And from Belgrade then southwards towards Sarajevo, towards Split. And then the Dalmatian coast railway, high-speed railway from Zagreb south to Zadar, then to Split, and then to Tirana south to Patras, and a tunnel over under the Adriatic high-speed railway towards then Napoli, connecting with the Italian grid. And then also from Slovenia to have one to Venice. And that is, I think, the way. And also from Klagenfurt south towards Trieste. That is the logical combination. Some of them is anyhow already planned, so let's not be too pessimistic. The Europe is, of course, working. But when you see the ambition which China has developed in the last 20 years, a similar network, even in the most remote regions, or when you see that even the African Union is now ready. They are rolling out this project for 2063 to have all the urban centers of Africa connected by high-speed railway infrastructure. And we in Europe do so little for Eastern Europe. It's quite shameful. So we have to end that now, and we have to have a new beginning. The crisis has a chance, and this new package, which will be done in the same way like the 750 of 2020, but now 2021, a new package, again 750, but exclusively focused on infrastructure, not on subsidizing of any kind of welfare systems or labor systems or whatever kind of priorities they were attached, but one which is a major drive for pan-European infrastructure from Mariupol, from Helsinki up and downwards, but obviously very much focused on Eastern Europe. Because Eastern Europe was, of course, you know, the communism, the lost part for 50 years, the terrible horrors of the destruction of the Second World War, mostly fought in Eastern Europe, and also the disasters before of the First World War on these battlefields. So there is a massive lack of infrastructure, and we have done some things, yes, and Poland could do it alone, but all the smaller countries could never do it alone. And if we continue with this kind of very nationalistic infrastructure funding, which we still have in Europe, then we will have only high-speed trains in the rich countries like France, Germany, Italy, Spain, until you drive from every village there with a high-speed train. And in Czech Republic, Romania, Bulgaria, there will be a high-speed train only in 2100 or so. And that's not what is very European, that's not very fair, and that's not very smart, and that's not very strategic. Let's also see there's a very important aspect in this infrastructure discussion, also about military mobility, about infrastructure interconnectivity in the railways, in the goods transport. But the most highly visible one, obviously, is with the interconnectivity with high-speed person transport. And when you see that in Eastern Europe, most of the personal transport today is still happening by car and buses, then I think it's really high time to have such an efficient public transport system, like the French and the Germans take it for granted today. And we should have it also east of Germany and east of Italy. And we are a little bit the poor neighbors, even in Austria. We have a little bit along the Danube Valley now from Salzburg to Linz. But we are really much slower than the Germans, and we are pretty much behind. And this can only be done with European funding and with European help and with a major drive for unity. That's why I call it the European Growth and Unity Package. Of course, it's expensive. Of course, it is not easy to pass it. But we have done it once, and now we can do it again. And we can do, after we have saved the southern Europeans now for a decade, difficult enough. Remember, we saved Greece, and even the eastern Europeans had to pay for it. Remember, we have now saved Italy and Spain in the corona, and also the eastern Europeans had to pay. It's quite logical now that there is this infrastructure drive for Eastern Europe now coming. It's not wasted, nothing of it. It's real built in real infrastructure. This company, the European Agency for Railway Infrastructure, can own these territories and these investments. If that's what is agreed upon, it's not a problem. The countries in the region can just grant the land. But it's also a kind of Keynesian kind of growth drive, if you want. I'm more for free markets. But in infrastructure, the state in Europe has to lead the way. And we can always then always privatize some of the state railway systems if we want to reduce the debt, which I'm very much in favor. 49% of Deutsche Bahn to be privatized on German Stock Exchange and 49% of Austrian ÖBB to be sold at the Austrian Stock Exchange. So I'm not really, you know, totally Keynesian, don't worry. But when it comes about the real high-speed infrastructure, I don't see the private sector going ahead with that one. Obviously, we have to do it also for political reasons, because we want to show that we are not completely useless continent compared to Africa and China and America and Russia, obviously, as well, that we can do things and we can achieve things, and that it's meaningful that we are in NATO and in EU, because we really build something where not everybody has to run away from Bulgaria and Ukraine towards Frankfurt or Germany or Paris, because that's the only places where there are jobs and where there is prosperity, because there is interconnectivity. And this kind of second-rate, second-class level Europeans, the ones which have high-speed railway and the ones which do not have, when you see compared, you know, in China, they even to Tibet, they built it, to Xinjiang, they built it, yeah. And we in Europe, we should also build it to Mariupol, and it makes a lot of sense, and also to Tirana and everywhere. You know, these are places as European as Paris or Brussels. So it's just a bit far away. So it even makes much more sense to have a high-speed railway there. And this is what we, I think, should achieve now. We have to set an ambitious target for that, let's say 20 years now, 2040, high-speed railway infrastructure is finished. That is basically the various projects I have listed. Maybe there might be more or some of them, but I don't think anything less makes sense. Otherwise, you want everybody just to drive by car, you know, and all goods to be transported by a car. No, I think we should really have efficient railway infrastructure, but obviously paid by the European Union. I'm calling also for the merger between SNCF and Deutsche Bahn. Let's not forget that one. And also funded by the EIB in order to make sure that we also have a big champion on the rails. And that will be a big global company. And then also to have liberalization, obviously, on the European railway system. That's also very good. There should be also competition, like we have it in Austria, successfully, thanks to the EU. That's quite the efficient system we have in Austria, competing between the Austrian state railway, by the way, privatized it partly, and the so-called Westbahn, at least on this Salzburg to Vienna. There is some efficient competition. Price is quite low and service is very good. So then let's come back. What we really need, learn from Biden Europe. Do it like Biden does it. He has now done the first recovery package. Very good. America is producing vaccines like never before. America is growing again. The unemployment is declining. That's very good. We have done that already half a year before. And also America is obviously doing much more. We shall now do the second step. The second step is in the European Growth and Unity Pact, and that is, again, expensive, but utterly necessary. You can obviously say there will be a lot of construction, and yes, we should construct much more. Unity requires. And you say that some of these tunnels I propose are ludicrous and expensive and complicated in Messina and Gibraltar and the Adriatic Tunnel, don't forget that one. But it seems to me that the Norwegians are doing similar, very ambitious projects, and also do the Chinese. And it's simple, the geography. Now the technology is there. When you look, the engineers say this is possible. I have the trust. Now it's for the economists and the politicians. Yeah, obviously, this is also only long-term economic feasible, so it must be a public investment. Does it make strategically sense to develop Eastern Europe and to connect with Asia and with Africa? I think yes. Is it the political symbol? Is it now the moment for some growth investment by the public? Yes, I think so. And yes, it's the moment for that. Yeah. Whenever it was ever the moment, then it's now. Let's make a decade of building or 2 decades of really unity in Europe, where in Eastern Europe you can be not on the, and allow me the polemic, because when I posted it on Facebook, some of my friends said to me that in Krakow, we are still having the infrastructure of the railway of the Austrian monarchy. And still, it's a little bit polemic. I know when I compare Ursula with the Kaiser Franz Josef, and I say that even the Kaiser Franz Josef could build a better infrastructure. And it's in some way true that we have a very good infrastructure, high speed in Western Europe. But in Eastern Europe, many of the rails are the same railways which we were built by Franz Josef and his imperial railway system. Not a lot has happened since then east of Austria. And even in Austria, we're using a lot of the same technology. We are still driving, using amortization, the investments of the K&K monarchy, of the Austrian-Hungarian monarchy 120 years ago. In the Balkans, we are even less advanced than in the past. In 1901, I looked it up, the Imperial Railways made a small-scale railway connection, a small gorge railway connection towards Trebinje and Herceg Novi in Montenegro today. So it was possible from Vienna to go by rail to Herceg Novi. It's not possible today. You know, you cannot do that. You have to take the car or the bus, huh? Or fly. You know, we are not as good as they were 120 years ago, not as connected as they were 120 years. We still use some of their technology and some of their, not the technology, but some of the investments, some of the same metal which was 120 years ago. Maybe they have changed the steel of the railways, but man, we are not ambitious in terms of unity and infrastructure. They had, of course, maybe military necessity, but so have we. Do we not want to defend Ukraine in the case of war? Don't we want to be mobile enough to transport American troops towards the east? Yeah. It's better American troops to be transported than our own boys to die in the battlefields. I'm very honest that maybe the Americans won't appreciate, but we also don't have the fighting capacity. Which troops should the Austrians or the Germans send? They simply don't exist. They would be defeated very fast by the Russians. So ultimately, it's much better if we pay for the infrastructure. And if we pay and make sure that there is efficient infrastructure, also from the military side, it makes a lot of sense. You can follow General Ben Hutchins on Twitter. He's tweeting all this military interoperability and infrastructure interconnectivity. But nevertheless, I'm more focused on tourism. It's very good for tourism. Can you imagine how wonderful it is when all these people and the successful consumers of Czech Republic, Austria and Germany, Northern Italy, when they can be fast in the Southern European holiday paradises where it's so beautiful, but not a lot of jobs, unfortunately. And it's better to have this mobility where they can really spend a weekend than in Split easily. In Paris, it's possible to go 3.5 hours, 3 hours 20 from Paris to Marseille. And we need, by train, whatever, 20 hours or 30 hours from Frankfurt. It's a bit far, I know. But we need 30 hours from Frankfurt, I looked it up, to Split. Yeah? So this is not good enough. And we should be ambitious, I think so. And we should be serious in that one. And yes, it's expensive, but we can afford it. We are also quite a rich continent. We are just differently constructed like America, which is a real state union, or China, which is a united continent. And it's not so much about the authoritarian aspect of China and about that one. No, it's simply that they are united. And we are just, you know, the Germans built the ICE for the Germans, the French for the TGV for the French. Yeah? And then we have this kind of patchwork of high-speed railway, which is non-existent east of Germany, because nobody of the smaller countries can afford such investment, obviously. And then, yeah, you know what the people always say, you know, I was in Germany, it's really everything working very well. Maybe I send my children to study there because maybe they find a job there. Maybe I go myself there. Maybe goodbye. And then all Eastern Europeans move to Western Europe because we are not connected enough. And connectivity is the only way to put something against this trend and better competitiveness, obviously. But I want to focus now on about the infrastructure aspect. And to have a Mariupol to Brussels ICE or TGV, and let's talk about the name. It can be called Eurostar. I love the term, actually. But ICE or TGV or Talgo, or there are so many terms, you know. And Thalys, yeah, and that might be for every country different. I like to use a European term for this Eastern European interconnectivity high-speed railway project and the European jet or something like this, Eurorail or anything with Europe would be good. And to also say Europe 2040 and to have it done. And then all Ukraine, the Balkans, Turkey. It's also important, high-speed railway network for Turkey is very, very powerful instrument also to show that we are very close whenever they cannot join the European Union politically. They can join our infrastructure unity. And that leads us towards the Southern Caucasus, that just was yesterday announced a kind of a truce in this inter-party conflict and some agreement was found. So that's really very good. So we should make effort for the transatlantic future of Georgia. Needs to be connected. Turkey is the only way. So that is, I think, very important. So I call for June, July to have a second package like we had it, the same format, the same volume, but this time focused on Eastern European infrastructure. And to get this done, yes, and we can afford it. European taxpayers call for that. That's the right way and the right thing to do. And to make it ambitious project 20 years when we go into the next funding project after 2027, already to add the funding to make sure that we have the sufficient instrument and tools and funding to connect Eastern Europe fully to the European high-speed railway network system from Helsinki towards Mariupol and also from Tbilisi towards Tirana, from Patras towards Split and to Zagreb, and including Belgrade, Budapest and all Lafayette like that. That's the way forward. That's the way to do it. That's what I call for. And I hope there will be wisdom and generosity and reason and rationality leading us into that direction. Thanks a lot again for listening, for peace, prosperity, and for better infrastructure connectivity in this beautiful continent of Europe. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye.